Well, you can be sure that almost any day of her life was as exciting as anybody might experience in a lifetime.
That's Patsy Millett, remembering her sister Robin's vivacious personality. Robin Miller was a pilot, a nurse, a Royal Flying Doctor Service flight nurse, and she flew over vast areas of Western Australia, often solo.
It's difficult to define it. It's always a challenge. You never know what you're going to encounter. In my particular job, you never know where you're going or when or for what.
She became well known in the North. When she joined the Royal Flying Doctor as a flying nurse, she became very well known, and she did get quite a number of awards and recognition. She got the Nancy Bird Award as the Woman Pilot of the Year. She was the Executive Officer and President of ZONTA, the Women Pilots Association. In about 1970, I think, she got an award from WAPA for the most notable contribution to aviation by a woman in Australia. And so posthumous awards were considerable. She was an ideal recipient for almost any award you can think of. She filled the bill for that. She was, for a start, a very, very nice-looking girl, slim and blonde and quite glamorous. And because she worked mostly in what you might describe as a man's world, she took some care to maintain the feminine look and the very nice clothes and hairdos, because I think she rather felt that was essential. She didn't want to look mannish or anything like that. She wanted to be, definitely feminine in the flying world. Even though she did a lot of heavy work, she pushed planes in and out and did her own mechanical work and so on, but she was good-looking and she was very, very charming to meet. Extremely interested in everybody and a quiet, responsible, helpful, genuine, always, I would say, reasonable girl.
Robin's sister Patsy was older by just 11 months. They were daughters of Mary Durack, author of Kings and Grass Castles.
We had a huge pastoral empire up there until 1950 of about 7 million acres, and so there was already a very, very strong connection to the North and the Aborigines that was in our family, and we kept a close connection with the North from the time we were born. But mind you, it came to an end in 1950 when the stations were sold up. But we did always remain very close to the North and went back and forth as much as we possibly could. So there were many draws for Robin to actually take her into the North, as well as the flying connection.
Mary Durack was married to Captain Horry Miller, the founder of Mac Robinson Miller Airlines, so it's no wonder that this pioneer of West Australian aviation was going to pass on a love for the air to at least one of his children.
In Broome, my father bought a Wackett trainer aircraft. It was a war surplus thing, I think. He had the aircraft just parked in the hangar there at the airport, and he frequently took all of us flying around the town in this little runabout, and Robin loved it. I wasn't that keen about it, but Robin thought it was absolutely wonderful, and so from very little she had the experience of flying with her dad.
So Horry actually took you up in the Wackett and you flew round Broome. That must have been an amazing experience, even if you didn't totally enjoy it.
No, there were sort of cracks in the floorboards and I could see the sea going underneath and sharks. I could actually see them. I didn't like that. But Robin loved every minute of it, and so did Julie, her sister Julie. But that, I think, interested her. And also because he was regional director of the airlines at that time, which was a really semi-retired job, we went out to meet all the aircraft coming through, the MMA planes and so on, and we knew all the pilots and air hostesses and flew back and forth all the time too in the old DC-3s. And Robin always loved every minute of it. So I think that was the early interest in aviation. But it was very hard to know how that might develop into any sort of a career. And she was more or less, she thought, well, she'd better do something sensible like nursing. She had absolutely no hope of ever flying an aeroplane. And so she did. She went into nursing after she left school. I was sort of rebellious and difficult child, and she was contented and reasonable and quiet and grew, my mother used to call her Mouse. And she went to school and was academically very bright and was head girl of the school, and went straight into nursing. We spent a lot of our childhood, well, most of our childhood in Perth, where we both went to Loreto Convent, but we also spent a lot of time going backwards and forwards to Broome, where my father had a house. It was in Robinson Street, just down from the Continental Hotel as it was then, and it was within a short walking distance of the water of Roebuck Bay. Holidays were all spent in Broome, and we also spent a year at school up there, and so we have very, very fond memories of Broome.
So, Patsy, you were rebellious and she was the quiet, contented one.
Yes. We were soon joined by my sister Julie. We were three under three, and there were eventually six children, and three under three just were such a handful. We did have home help and so on. We got on all right, although Robin and Julie got on better with one another. And but both of us, both Robin and I, had iron wills and we didn't give an inch to one another. I can remember that. But we went through life always close friends. And so we were very close, the three of us, and I lost both Robin and Julie very young. My other sister went at 26, and that was a tremendous blow to Robin. I don't think Robin ever got over that, over losing Julie before her in 1969. And, you know, after that, I think she got more philosophical about the fact that any of us could go any time.
A commercial flying career for women, fetchingly called aviatrix, took several decades of persistence since the 1920s and the Second World War to eventuate. Robin Miller was born in the right era for that glass ceiling to be broken. Her future husband, Dr. Harold Dix, president of the RFDS, encouraged her to get her commercial pilot's licence. But even then, in 1966, to be a female commercial pilot still came with inherent expectations about a woman's ability to fly.
She could today get a job straight away as a commercial airline pilot. They don't discriminate against women these days, although it is harder to get in than for men. And she did eventually apply for a commercial job with MMA, which even though her father was the founding director, she was refused that job. Absolutely out of the question.
Because she was a woman?
Well, of course. They came up with some excuse about how she wouldn't be able to handle the asymmetrical flying and it would be, you know, too heavy a work for her and it required a man's strength, which it may have done, I don't know, but that was the excuse they used. And so she really only did it just to sort of test the waters, I think. But then she did triple certificate nursing course and took off prizes and all that sort of thing. She was extremely good, very good nurse and thought of very highly by her various training matrons and so on. And then it came to her mind how on earth could she possibly combine her love of flying and the nursing. So while she was completing her midwifery, she began to take flying lessons from Jandicott, and she actually got her private pilot's license, and so she knew it was just a first step. So having done this, she then went on eventually to get her commercial license, and she then came up with the idea, as it was the time when the polio was rife. The terrible disease, the polio disease. We had, most in the cities had been immunised, but not in the remote areas and certainly not the Aborigines. So knowing this, she went in and suggested in the health department that she go out into the remote areas and give them the immunisation. And she would, in fact, she said, supply her own plane. This would be, of course, bought for her by her father, who had agreed that he would help her with this enterprise, and so that is how it came. It was she made them an offer they couldn't refuse, as it were.
Well, and this is a really interesting part of Robin's career and how she came to get the nickname Sugarbird Lady. Elaborate a bit more, if you can, on this part of her career, the polio flights.
Well, she distributed the vaccine on a sugar cube. she would drip the vaccine, the Sabin, onto a sugar cube, and the Aborigines gave her the nickname the Sugar Bird Lady because they got the sugar cubes and she came in from the sky. All the vaccine needed to be refrigerated wherever she went, and this was one of the most difficult parts of it in the remote north, to actually find somewhere that she could keep it cold overnight. She undertook the task absolutely single-handed. And over the period, she administered 37,000 doses of the oral vaccine, mostly to the Aboriginal communities, and she covered 43,000 air miles, visited 450 towns and outstations, and she preserved all her flight schedules and plans, so you can see those in the Canberra Library. She didn't only work with the Aborigines and the oral vaccine. She rendered medical services to outback communities, including the white community, well over and above the call of duty. And she became extremely well known throughout the North at this time, also for administering treatment for the eye diseases and trachoma and things like that.
Throughout the late 60s and early 70s, Robin Miller was constantly in the air. Whether she was doing ferry flights of aircraft, such as a solo flight from Paris to Perth, competing in the Transcontinental Women's Air Race, the Powderpuff Derby, or working for the RFDS across the Kimberley and Pilbara. She kept detailed diaries, which, along with her nurse's costume, Sister Patsy Millett has donated to the National Library in Canberra. Those diaries were the foundation for Robin's books Sugarbird Lady and Flying Nurse.
Well, you can be sure that almost any day of her life was as exciting as anybody might experience in a lifetime. It was, they were just crammed with every sort of adventure, not only medical emergencies, but also very, very difficult weather and mechanical emergencies and things going wrong with the plane. She noted in her diary that all too often the flying doctor was called in too late, and virtually moribund patients were handed over with little hope of surviving the journey. And Robin liked to deliver her charges alive, and she went to extraordinary lengths to revive and hold what might be considered hopeless cases. And even if they died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, she felt she'd done her best, and she could face the next crisis with a will. And that way she was able to bear it. She found it best not to inquire about the ultimate fates of her patients, although the information was often passed to her anyway, because it was so disheartening after a long struggle to fan the spark of life to hear that it had been in vain. And, of course, one of her jobs was to clean the aircraft every time when she got down. And it was it regularly bore witness to the awful drama. You know, seats and walls awash with blood and vomit and medical equipment. And that was the last thing she did at night. She would clean the aircraft and she would take home the seat covers for washing and mending and so on. So that was the sort of thing she faced on a daily basis. And it's really beyond imagination now. I mean, you couldn't imagine anybody, but she was totally dedicated. I think that's the word for it. It was complete dedication to the job that let her do that. Her diaries also show that she did some extraordinary things. She thinks she flew in the last of the desert Aborigines that had never seen white people before. She did note in her diary that she thought they were probably the last of them, and they had let alone been in an aeroplane before, and that sort of thing. But the daily dramas were really unimaginable.
Some of those things you wouldn't be allowed to do today, or no, the workplace.
That's right. She overflew her hours, and she used to do a certain amount of doctoring of her flight records so that the overhours weren't picked up. After her last trip across the world to ferry an aircraft back, in 1975, which was the year she died. She probably had the worst year that she'd ever had, the worst casualties. And over her last 2 months, she was faced with an absolutely gruesome parade of burns and bashings and botched suicides and incomplete abortions and victims massively hemorrhaging in the aircraft all over her and the other patients. And for her, the worst thing was the children, the dead or dying children. And she notes their limp little hands, and she could hardly bear that. But she never put on a mask or anything like that. She just sat with infectious diseases and tuberculosis and hepatitis and glandular fever, all those things.
Was she philosophical then about an early death? Or
no, I think she just felt it was I don't think so. I think she believed there was a big possibility she could die in an accident, but not of disease. She didn't seem to think about that at all. She was just doing a job. But she would carefully leave her will with me every time she went on one of the overseas ferry flights. But she used to say not much gratitude for what she did. After she resuscitated a station manager's wife who'd been accidentally shot, she did receive a card with a cheque, a donation towards the flying doctor of $50. The flight cost $160, but still, it was better than nothing. But there were very few donations during that time towards the costs of the flying doctor.
What did your parents think, Horry and Mary?
They were tremendously proud. She was the jewel in their crown, really, you'd have to say. She was constantly in the newspapers on Mercy flights, and she was great copy for the papers. And the amount of newspaper articles that you'll find in the National Library is absolutely amazing. There was something about her about once a week, I would say, in the paper. And she also went on about 8 ferry flights overseas to collect aircraft for the Royal Flying Doctor and fly them back with Dr. Harold Dix. And this was also very interesting for the newspapers, that she flew across the world to deliver these aircraft, new aircraft. And she was always pictured going off and coming home. And she was in the Powder Puff Derby, which was a women's competition for women pilots, and she got a very good place in that. And so there's I think she got plenty of recognition. She didn't like it. She thought too much, and she didn't like the publicity, but she was assured that it was in the interests of the flying doctor, and so she put up with it.
In 1973, Robin Miller married Dr. Harold Dix. But a year later, a melanoma on her leg was diagnosed.
She knew she was flying on borrowed time.
And then, if she was still busy working in 1975, was there an inkling that she had the melanoma? Did she slow down?
Well, about 2 years earlier, she had, in fact, a malignant melanoma removed, and she had various treatments for this. They thought they'd got it all. And I can remember her saying to me, they cut it out of her leg. If they've got it all, then I'll be all right. But if they haven't, she said, I've got about 2 years. And that was precisely right. She knew she was flying on borrowed time. And I think she was optimistic as one can be, but there it was. She got 2 years after that. And then towards the end, she knew she was flying ill. She knew that she was in pain, and that she really was probably falling back into the horror of the cancer that killed her. But she kept going to the very, very last, wrote her diary to the last, and when she could no longer get out of the bed, she would man the phone and do the flight planning for her eventual husband, Dr. Harold Dix, as he went on with his flying doctor duties.
Robin's death at the age of 35 was a loss felt across Australia. This obituary from ABC TV's This Day Tonight.
This is the Robin Miller that so many West Australians knew so well. Robin Miller, the flying nurse. From her father, the pioneer aviator Horry Miller, Robin inherited a passionate love of flying. It was quite natural that she should follow in his footsteps, and for 15 years she flew all over the state, particularly the northwest, bringing medical help to thousands of isolated people. The early years later became the basis of Robin's biography, called appropriately Flying Nurse. The combination of an attractive and talented young woman and such an adventurous life proved irresistible to newspaper and television journalists. So over the years, Robin Miller became not only a household figure, but also one of the best advertisements for the Royal Flying Doctor Service around the world. And with her flying doctor husband, Dr. Harold Dix, Robin Miller did fly around the world, or more accurately, completed the long flight across the Pacific from America no less than 8 times, ferrying aircraft to Western Australia for the Flying Doctor Service. But now, tragically, Robin Miller is dead, her life cut short by cancer.
I just remember her coming and going quietly, cleaning up the house for my mother always. She was an angel. She came in and out. She tried to look after everybody in the family who had any sort of ailment, including her elderly grandmother. And she was just the person we all said, when anything went wrong, call Robin. And you can imagine, since we got so dependent on Robin, on Robin's advice, and where was Robin, and she was just the centre of the family, how much we have always missed her.
Of course,
every day. Absolutely irreplaceable. I just remember her as a dear, affectionate sister who was always there for us all and for the wider public, of course, as well.
Robin Miller was buried in the Broome Cemetery next to her younger sister, Juliana. The epitaph is a quote from a French aviator and author of the famous Little Prince book, Antoine Saint-Exupéry. It reads, "Can those be the same stars? Is this the same sky? How bright, how clear,
she deserves
what safety
to be remembered.
We have reached."
She really does. She is an absolutely unique personality. And she gave her life to the service of others.